Perhaps we need not imagine it. Do you remember that magnificent short story of Stephen Vincent Benet's called By the Waters of Babylon? It tells of a boy, the son of a priest, in a tribe which must be very like an early American Indian tribe. This is the story of the boy's coming of age, his initiation into the priesthood. After the rituals have been performed upon him, he goes out alone into the forest to dream his dreams and to make his magics. And his dreams provide him with such strong medicine that he is inspired to go not simply to the dead places, which are forbidden to all save priests, but even to travel far off to the great dead place, the place of the gods. One of the remaining towers of this ruined city he enters, and in a room of the tower he eats and sleeps.
I woke in the midst of the night. When I woke, the fire had gone out, and I was cold. It seemed to me that all around me there were whisperings of voices. Some will say that I slept again, but I do not think that I slept. I had stepped out of my body. I could see my body asleep in front of the cold fire, but it was not I. I was drawn to look out upon the city of the gods. It should have been dark, for it was night. But it was not dark. Everywhere there were lights. Lines of light, circles and blurs of lights. 10,000 torches would not have been the same. The city itself was alight. You could barely see the stars for the glow in the sky. I thought to myself, this is strong magic, and trembled. There was a roaring in my ears like the rushing of rivers. And then my eyes grew used to the light and my ears to the sound. I knew that I was seeing the city as it had been when the gods were alive. Oh, that was a sight indeed. Yes, that was a sight. I could not have seen it in my body. My body would have died. Everywhere went the gods on foot and in chariots. There were gods beyond number and counting, and their chariots blocked the streets. They had turned night to day for their pleasure and did not sleep with the sun. The noise of the coming and the going was the noise of many waters. It was magic what they could do. It was magic what they did. I looked out of another window. The great vines of their bridges were mended. The god roads went east and west. Reckless were the gods and always in motion. They bored tunnels under rivers. They flew in the air with unbelievable tools. They did giant works. No part of the earth was safe from them. For if they wished for a thing, they summoned it from the other side of the world. And always as they feasted and made love, there was a drum in their ears, the pulse of a giant city beating, beating like a man's heart. It is not for the metal alone we go to the dead places now. There are the books and the writings. They are hard to learn. The magic tools are broken. We can look at them and wonder. At least we make a beginning. And when I am chief priest, we shall go beyond the great river. We shall go to the place of the gods. The place New York. Not one man, but a company. We shall look for the images of the gods and find the god Ashing and the others. The gods Lincoln, Biltmore, and Moses. They were men who built the city, not gods or demons. They were men. They were men who were here before us. We must build again.
Is Mr. Benet's vision of the future perhaps a little too somber for you? If it is, I apologize, although not very sincerely, for I am extremely fond of Binet's stories, and particularly of this one. There are perhaps no more striking episodes in American history than those occasional ones in which great Indian leaders, who were often highly civilized, able, and wise men, faced their white oppressors. One of the greatest of the Indian chiefs was Tecumseh, the Shawnee who died fighting the Americans during the War of 1812. Tecumseh was a wise man, a great military leader, and an extremely eloquent speaker. One of the most remarkable of his speeches which survives to us is the one which he addressed to Governor Harrison at a council in Vincennes in 1810.
It is true. I am a Shawnee. My forefathers were warriors. Their son is a warrior. From them I take only my existence. From my tribe I take nothing. I am the maker of my own fortune, and oh, that I could make that of my red people and of my country as great as the conception of my mind when I think of the spirit that rules the universe. I would not then come to Governor Harrison to ask him to tear the treaty, to obliterate the landmark. But I would say to him, "Sir, you have liberty to return to your own country. The being within, communing with past ages, tells me that once, nor until lately, there was no white man on this continent. That it then all belonged to red men, children of the same parents, placed on it by the great spirit that made them, to keep it, to traverse it, to enjoy its productions, and to fill it with the same race. Once a happy race, since made miserable by the white people, who are never contented, but always encroaching. The way, and the only way to check this evil, is for all the red men to unite in claiming a common and equal right in the land, as it was at first and should be yet. For it never was divided, but belongs to all for the use of each."
I think that our cornerstone should contain some reminder of the fact that America is and always has been a magnificent country.
This is Bill Grisky speaking. You know, a big reason why so many cost-conscious truck operators choose International Trucks lies in just one word: service. International maintains the world's largest service organization devoted exclusively to trucks, so that when service is needed, it's within easy reach of all International owners. And that's only part of it. Every International mechanic has been trained to know your truck from headlights to tailgate. He uses methods worked out by International service engineers to give you the best truck service in a hurry. He uses factory parts designed exclusively for your truck. He knows your International truck better than any mechanic can. So when you own or drive an International, you can count on fast, efficient, expert service from one of the 5,000 International truck service stations as close as the nearest phone. Compare International with any other truck for value, performance, and price. Compare International for service, and you'll see why so many users agree that International is America's best truck buy.
Thank you, Bill. Lee, would you come right back up, please? Lee, just look right into two, would you, please?
Two?
Yeah. Now, just identify yourself and go right ahead.
This is Lee Bennett speaking. A big reason why so many cost-conscious truck operators choose International trucks lies in just one word: service. International maintains the world's largest service organization devoted exclusively to trucks, so that when service is needed, it's within easy reach of all International owners. Well, that's only part of it. Every International mechanic has been trained to know your truck from headlights to tailgate. He uses methods worked out by international service engineers to give you the best truck service and in a hurry. He uses factory parts designed exclusively for your truck. He knows your international truck better than any mechanic can. Now, when you own or drive an international, you can count on fast, efficient, expert service from one of the 5,000 international truck service stations as close as the nearest home. Compare international with any other truck for value, performance, price. Compare international for service, and you'll see why so many users agree that international is America's best truck buy.
Thank you, Lee. Jim Hamilton there?
John Holtman is here.
All right, John, would you come up, please? Johnny?
Yes?
Just look right into two, would you please?
Okay.
And identify yourself and then just go right on into the top. Go ahead.
This is John Holtman. A big reason why so many cost-conscious truck operators choose international trucks lies in just one word, service. International maintains the world's largest service organization devoted exclusively to trucks, so that when service is needed, it's within easy reach of all international owners. And that's only part of it. Every international mechanic has been trained to know your truck from headlights to tailgate. He uses methods worked out by international service engineers to give you the best truck service in a hurry. He uses factory parts designed exclusively for your truck. He knows your international truck better than any mechanic can. When you own or drive an international, you can count on fast, efficient, expert service from one of the 5,000 international truck service stations as close as the nearest phone. Compare international with any other truck for value, performance, price. Compare international for service, and you'll see why so many users agree that international is America's best truck buy.
Thank you, Johnny. Who else is there, please? Okay, Jim. Jim, just identify yourself. Talk into and go right on into your car.
All right. This is Jim Hamilton speaking. A big reason why so many cost-conscious truck operators choose international trucks lies in just one word, service. International maintains the world's largest service organization devoted exclusively to trucks, so that when service is needed, it's within easy reach of all international owners. And that's only a part of it. Every international mechanic has been trained to know your truck from headlights the tailgate. He uses methods worked out by international service engineers to give you the best truck service in a hurry. He uses factory parts designed exclusively for your truck. He knows your international truck better than any mechanic can. When you own or drive an international, you can count on fast, efficient, expert service from one of the 5,000 international truck service stations as close as your nearest phone. Compare international with any other truck for value, performance, price. Compare international for service, and you'll see why so many users agree that international is America's best truck buy.
Thank you, Jim. Is Greg Donovan there? Don Gibson there.
Good afternoon.
One second, Don. Sorry, if the studio door is open, could we close it, please? All of this is being recorded.
It's a closed meeting. Closed meeting.
Don, would you identify yourself and just look right into two?
Right.
Go ahead, please.
This is Don Gibson. A big reason why so many cost-conscious truck operators choose international trucks lies in just one word. Service. International maintains the world's largest service organization devoted exclusively to trucks, so that when service is needed, it's within easy reach of all international owners. And that's only part of it. Every international mechanic has been trained to know your truck from headlights to tailgate. He uses methods worked out by international service engineers to give you the best truck service in a hurry. He uses factory parts designed exclusively for your truck. He knows your International truck better than any mechanic can. When you own or drive an International, you can count on fast, efficient, expert service from one of the 5,000 International truck service stations as close as the nearest telephone.
There was that enormous, rambling, and decrepit old house that stood on a hill outside of town, crammed with elementals, revenants, poltergeists, zombies, and vampires, from rooftop to several feet below the cellar floor. The vampires used the cellar, naturally. The house never really existed, except on windy October nights, with the full orange moon dodging around gray clouds. Then there was another hill in New York State, which held only the fire-charred remains of a great mansion. A driveway lined with magnificent trees and a bottomless well. That hill was haunted by an assortment of ghosts. One, a beautiful American girl who died of a broken heart. Several of them innocent bystanders. Two or three former secret agents of Napoleon I. And one, the chief of them all, just possibly, was the ghost of a king of France. Now there was a place to wait for the stroke of midnight on the eve of All Hallows.
It's always surprised me that there are so few good songs in the American or even in the British tradition which are suitable for Halloween.
As he approached the stream, his heart began to thump. He summoned up, however, all his resolution, gave his horse half a score of kicks in the ribs, and attempted to dash briskly across the bridge. But instead of starting forward, the perverse old animal made a lateral movement and ran broadside against the fence. Ichabod, whose fears increased with the delay, jerked the reins on the other side and kicked lustily with the contrary foot. It was all in vain. His steed started, it is true, but it was only to plunge to the opposite side of the road into a thicket of brambles and elder bushes. The schoolmaster now bestowed both whip and heel upon the starveling ribs of old Gunpowder, who dashed forward, snuffling and snorting, but came to a stand just by the bridge with a suddenness that had nearly sent his rider sprawling over his head. Just at this moment, a plashy tramp by the side of the bridge caught the sensitive ear of Ichabod. In the dark shadow of the grove on the margin of the brook, he beheld something huge, misshapen, black and towering. It stirred not, but seemed gathered up in the gloom like some gigantic monster ready to spring upon the traveler. The hair of the affrighted pedagogue rose upon his head with terror. What was to be done? To turn and fly was now too late. And besides, what chance was there of escaping ghost or goblin, if such it was, which could ride upon the wings of the wind? Summoning up, therefore, a show of courage, he demanded in stammering accents, Who are you? He received no reply. He repeated his demand in still more agitated voice. Still there was no answer. Once more he cudgeled the sides of the inflexible Gunpowder, and shutting his eyes, broke forth with involuntary fervor into a psalm tune. Just then the shadowy object of alarm put itself in motion, and with a scramble and a bound, stood at once in the middle of the road. Though the night was dark and dismal, yet the form of the unknown might now in some degree be ascertained. He appeared to be a horseman of large dimensions, and mounted on a black horse of powerful frame. He made no offer of molestation or sociability, but kept aloof on one side of the road, jogging along on the blind side of old Gunpowder, who had now got over his fright and waywardness. There was something in the moody and dogged silence of this pertinacious companion that was mysterious and appalling. It was soon fearfully accounted for. On mounting a rising ground which brought the figure of his fellow traveler in relief against the sky,
gigantic in height and muffled in a cloak, Ichabod was horror-struck on perceiving that he was headless. But his horror was still more increased on observing that the head which should have rested on his shoulders was carried before him on the pommel of the saddle. His terror rose to desperation. He rained a shower of kicks and blows upon Gunpowder, hoping by a sudden movement to give his companion the slip, but the specter started full jump with him. Away then they dashed through thick and thin, stones flying and sparks flashing at every bound. Ichabod's flimsy garments fluttered in the air as he stretched his long-legged body away over his horse's head in the eagerness of his flight. As yet, the panic of the steed had given his unskillful rider an apparent advantage in the chase. But just as he got halfway through the hollow, the girth of the saddle gave way, and he felt it slipping from under him. He seized it by the pommel and endeavored to hold it firm, but in vain. And had just time to save himself by clasping old Gunpowder around the neck when the saddle fell to the earth and he heard it trampled underfoot by his pursuer. An opening in the trees now cheered him with the hope that the church bridge was at hand. The wavering reflection of a silver star in the bosom of the brook told him that he was not mistaken. He saw the walls of the church dimly glaring under the trees beyond. He recollected the place where Brom Bone's ghostly competitor had disappeared. If I can but reach that bridge, thought Ichabod, I am safe. Just then he heard the black steed panting and blowing close behind him. He even fancied that he felt his hot breath. Another convulsive kick in the ribs and old Gunpowder sprang upon the bridge. He thundered over the resounding planks. He gained the opposite side. And now Ichabod cast a look behind him to see if his pursuer should vanish according to the rule in a flash of fire and brimstone. Just then, there was the goblin rising in his stirrups, and in the very act of throwing his head at him, Ichabod endeavored to dodge the horrible missile, but it was too late. It encountered his cranium with a tremendous crash. He was tumbled headlong into the dust, and Gunpowder, the black steed, and the goblin rider passed by like a whirlwind.